Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears. I've got my regular gardeners here, Lance and Lulu. Good evening, worms.
Hi, everybody.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. And special guest, glad to welcome him back to the program. It's Frank Stoniker. Good evening, Frank.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
Pleasure. Frank is operating up at the CSU Organic Research Station. So we're going to be talking about the history of that and the reopening of that and the exciting things going on there. And I'm going to give the phone numbers because we do have a lot of expertise in the room tonight. 527-4868-1866, KVNF Now, worm at kvnf.org. Before we get rolling, I just want to mention the weather, because if you were lucky enough to foresee the forecast and get your seed out there, boy.
Yeah.
You are taking advantage of some beautiful moisture. And
yeah, fish. The second bed of carrots got planted. Perfect.
Okay. Perfect. We wouldn't expect anything less, Lance.
at the last minute, my trees finished being pruned.
There
and
you
I
go.
Was very
timing.
Excited about
timing.
It.
Yeah. All right.
So life is good.
Life is good,
yeah.
And we are enjoying the moisture. So thank you very much,
moisture gods.
Moisture gods. Right. All right, Frank Stoniker has been with us a couple times before, orchardist up at Osito Orchards, and now up on Rogers Mesa, running the CSU Organic Research Station at Rogers Mesa.
It's a mouthful. Yeah.
What's the acronym for that again?
ORS.
ORS. That's
we
right.
We were just discussing whether an oar is like a paddle. Do you row it or do you paddle it? And I think you row with oars.
Yes.
So we're rowing towards that organic that cornucopia. What's a sea full of fruit and vegetable? Anyway, that's where we're headed.
Sure. Yeah. Beautiful organic cornucopia of love and food.
You can paddle with an oar too. When you're hard up and all you've got is an oar and you need to get somewhere in a boat, you can paddle with
you
it.
You can do that.
That's great.
Do that with your hands and your toes too.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the research station, because it does have a history, and recently I guess, what do you say, resurrected?
Yeah, hopefully resurrected.
Mm-hmm.
So very briefly, I won't bury you in history, but the research station was closed for about 10 years when CSU came on short times. They were able to keep a few stations going, but Rogers Mesa was one that got closed down for a period of time. And luckily, the vocal North Fork Valley convinced Millie Hamner, our state representative, to push for some funding, which she succeeded in getting from the legislature. And CSU leveraged that money and reopened Rogers Mesa and had some money to spare to rebuild Orchard Mesa, put up some nice new buildings there, as well as over at Rocky Ford. They're doing a lot of expansion there. So thanks Rogers Mesa.
Yeah, and changing the name to Organic Research Station, which is pretty important because you guys, your entire focus is organic.
That's right. We were lucky also to have an advisory committee that really thought that organic agriculture was critical in this area and underrepresented in terms of research delivery. And we're one of the few organic research stations in the country. We're not entirely certified. There is a block of trees, of apple trees, that are transitional right now, but soon to be certified organic. And all the work at the station will be focusing on organic production systems. So
that's so excellent.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah. So the apple trees that are in transition, were they left over from previous organic operations and then became unorganic?
So the trees were there from years ago. Those research blocks were what was left of the apple orchards. There were also peach and cherry orchards that were torn out, and a big old block of poplars that was torn out. But the apples had been cared for even in the absence of CSU's activity, and the care included some conventional pesticide treatments.
Right.
So after 3 years of not using those prohibited materials, we'll be able to certify those apple blocks as organic as well. The rest of the land had not received applications of prohibited materials, so we were able to certify that immediately.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Wow, that's so cool.
Interesting to hear that you're one of the few in the nation. And I guess that goes to your analogy here of rowing upstream.
Yeah. Well, as you were saying that, I'm thinking, well, how fortuitous is that? Because it seems to, I think Lance will agree, and pretty much a lot of people, that this climate change thing or whatever, these erratic flooding and droughts and fires and so forth, it seems to me that more places that can be in production safely from, a regular environmental disaster, mm-hmm. to have those places being trending more towards organics as well is key. And to me, that seems like something that is so necessary at this moment. I mean, when all those floods happened, what happened to all that soil? And a lot of those places that flooded were chemically managed. So all those chemicals went downstream.
That's true. Yeah. Well,
you know.
And I think one of the premises of organic agriculture is carbon sequestration
and
keeping your soil healthy. And a big focus, or at least in the big picture of things, the station needs to be addressing climate change very seriously, because agriculture is a really big player in climate change. Mm-hmm. And we have the capacity to be a big sponge for carbon. So everything that we're going to be doing will have that certainly in mind. Mm-hmm. And we're not going to change climate change, but we can be part of maybe mitigating it to some small degree, and also looking at methods that we can use right now that are going to allow growers to continue to grow here successfully. And that may be different crops. We may be looking, well, right now we're looking at table grapes as an alternative to some of the more frost-sensitive tree and vine crops.
I think
that they bloom later. They're tough and hardy. There's a good market for them. And it looks like a promising crop for this area. We're just starting on variety trials there, so hopefully we'll find some that do well here.
Yeah, my Reliance grape isn't doing very well.
This year's not a good year. I'm going to give the phone numbers, 527-4868-1866. KVNF now, email us, worm@kvnf.org. Frank, what are some of the things you're busy planning up there? Perennials, the table grapes?
Mentioned the table grapes. That's exciting. Of course, we put them in last year, so we only have 1 year, and we have a few years before we have fruit. But another two areas that we're headed off into are in the peach arena. Cytospora or gamosis is a real big disease for peach growers, for conventional and organic growers. So we're working on management of Cytospora, trying to find methods to reduce its impact. And also looking at rootstocks for peaches that may be less susceptible to Cytospora. Yannis Minas is our pomologist. He's from Greece. He's a peach expert, and he's bringing back a lot of information from Europe on different training methods that will allow us to grow more trees in a smaller area and get higher production and hopefully reduce some of the long-term disease issues.
Now, wasn't there some type of apple tree you were planting, Montezuma or something like that?
Oh, so the Montezuma Orchard Restoration Project is a program coming out of Cortez, and
that's appropriate.
Yeah, it's very, very
Cortez.
Right. So we'll see who wins on that one. But they're interested in bringing back heirloom varieties and ancient apples that were grown here by the settlers.
Mm. Oh,
okay. I have one.
Fantastic.
In your yard?
Yeah.
Really?
Big Mama.
Oh, Big Mama is ancient,
you can't get your arms
right?
around her. I mean, she's huge. and that we think it's a wine sap apple. And then Little Mama, who is barely alive right now, Lance and I thought, well, it's got to be a pippin because the Little Mama and the pear tree kept swapping this black disease back and forth. And
it's not
fire blight. It's different. And it kills off the whole branch. It's not like, the little crook thing. Yeah, the little end of the
shepherd's
branch.
Crook.
Yeah, gets the little thing on it and turns shepherd's crook and turns black. No, it's the whole. It's like the whole branch.
Well, fire blight will do that. It'll take an entire tree. And this weather that we're having, this wet weather during bloom, is really dangerous.
Yeah.
Luckily, it's cool enough. But
It will? It'll take a whole tree?
It will. It'll take a big branch in a hurry, and it'll take a whole tree.
If it did that, then that's what it is.
And that can show up at any time, right? We're not waiting till the end of the summer or anything for fire blight. You can start to see that.
Yeah, actually, a lot of infection happens during bloom because the bacteria enters through the bloom.
Okay.
And so we try to protect our blooms with some biocontrol agents, some fungi that are antagonistic to the bacteria.
Huh.
And
well, the thing is Big Mama never gets it. Just the little tree, apple tree, and that one pear tree. And they're all managed the same. And
yeah, there's a lot of varietal differences there.
Wow.
And some rootstocks. We're doing rootstock trials as well.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So you have this planting these apple trees to kind of go with this Montezuma Cortez project, and you're participating in this. Is it tree fruit project or fruit tree project?
So the
rootstock project.
It's called NC140, and don't ask me what the NC is. But anyway, it's a
code name. NC140.
I could tell you, but I'd have to do something drastic. It's a national program, and I think there are at least a dozen, maybe 20 research stations around the country that are trialing these different rootstocks on apples. And this year, Gala Fruiting Wood is on these different rootstocks, and all the trials are done exactly the same all the way across the country. And every year, participants in this NC140 get together and compare notes on how this rootstock did compared to this rootstock in these different climates and soils. And
wow. How do they decide what's going to be an NC140?
That's a very elite group of rootstock specialists that have smoky meetings
that is
and dark
also
rooms.
Top secret. Yes, exactly.
Wow.
Top secret.
Wow.
And, I haven't had the privilege of participating in those, so that's all I can tell you. But
right, wow.
A lot of the work is done in Cornell. There's a lot of rootstock research done there. It's a big apple research research center.
Okay, and so go ahead, Lance.
I was just going to ask him, how many types of rootstock are you testing?
So we'll have 15 different ones on this trial. And we have 15 trees from each rootstock. Mm-hmm. So we replicate them. We have 3 trees per rep, and they're all going to be 4 feet apart and 12 feet between rows and...
Very specific.
Yep.
Can I just ask, rootstock, what are we talking about? We're talking about taking the root from one tree and grafting it onto another tree. Could you just maybe clarify what that process is?
So, yeah, it is just that. Rootstocks are the basal part of a tree, and normally scionwood or fruiting wood is grafted onto that. And sometimes there'll be a rootstock and an interstem, which is a different variety, and then a third variety on top of that. And you can do any number of combinations there.
Yeah, combinations. You guys were talking about some different combinations. Can we just
mention
that?
the rootstocks, they're experimenting to see which ones do the best in the certain soils, different soils and weather conditions and watering. And you mentioned doing almond rootstock for peaches.
Yeah.
And and you mentioned that the almond rootstock is more, does well in the alkaline soils.
What I know of it, I'm not an expert in that, but some of the almond rootstocks do better on a high pH or an alkaline okay. soil. And so there's a whole group that are being used in the West. Some of them seem to be more resistant to replant disease as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then many rootstocks are used because of their dwarfing and precocity. And that's how quick a tree will become fruiting.
Mm-hmm.
So I planted some Gisela rootstocks on my cherries in high tunnels, trying to get cherries that would bear in the second, third year.
Okay.
And gotcha. Normally cherries take, 7 years
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
fruit? And mm-hmm. apples now you see grown like corn, you know, a foot apart in a row, and they're stacked in there on these very, very dwarfing rootstocks that you have to support the tree, but they fruit in the second and third year. And so they're able to, you can change varieties out quickly depending on market demands,
wow.
which is a big thing. Unfortunately,
this rootstock that you said that is resistant to the when you pull an old orchard out,
mm-hmm.
the rotting of that old orchard. If you planted, come back and plant bare root trees, that bacteria, whatever's rotting the old wood, can attack the new trees, right?
Yeah. So
you've developed a rootstock for that.
I didn't develop anything.
No.
Somebody's working on that.
There okay. are
these whole complexes of bacteria and fungi and mm-hmm. nematodes that attack, that are in the soil from the previous orchard. And if you plop a new tree in there that doesn't have resistance to those organisms, they're susceptible to it.
Yeah.
They die, and you call that replant disease.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a
I knew it when you said that. I didn't know the exact.
Yeah.
Yeah, particular. Oh, yes, that's that. So when you take out an orchard, actually, or trees, it's good to let it sit for a year or two, if
yeah.
you can.
If you can afford to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
There are quite a few different management approaches to that. And
yeah.
Some of them in the conventional arena is sterilization of the soil with uh-huh. with fumigants. But there are also biological fumigants we can use. There are some mustards that you can grow mm-hmm. and turn into the soil and
yeah.
basically
oh, wow.
gas the soil with.
Wow.
Mustard gas.
Fascinating.
What was
yeah.
Ron Godin was working with somebody down in Palisade. And do you guys remember this? They're growing broccoli as mm-hmm. the cover crop for this to take care of this problem so he could plant sooner.
Yeah, it's amazing the specificity
wow.
of some of these
yeah.
cover crops. Like broccoli will take out verticillium, which is a root disease, better than any other brassica, even though they're all the same species. You can try kale, you can try all these different mustards, and some of them will work very specifically in one disease and not on another. So there's a lot of work to figure
mm-hmm.
out what's going to work for what.
Amazing. And thank goodness we've got the organic research station up there to
yeah,
help us with all of this.
Right?
Right. I want to give the phone numbers again because we have Frank Stoniker here from the CSU Organic Research Station at Rogers Mesa. And, of course, Lance and Lulu. And the numbers are 970-527-4868, 1-866-KVNF-NOW. Frank, I just want to mention before we get off of the rootstock project that, again, you're probably the only organic research station that's participating in that. Project?
I think in the NC-140 we are the only organic
okay.
station, and there are several organic research stations around the country. Some of them are part of bigger stations. We're pretty unique, though, in that we're an entire station that's
mm-hmm.
certified organic.
Right. So a lot of great information you'll be able to share from
yeah,
that project.
See, that's so important. It just blows me away. It's so important. I mean, we got to get, yeah, never mind.
That's all right, darling. You just get going.
No, and no. Then, well, you know how yeah. it is, because there it is. I mean, we got to get off this merry-go-round of pesticides and chemicals. I mean, we're poisoning everything. It does. I used to have a bumper sticker that said, "Chemicals don't know when to stop killing," or something like that. Pesticides don't know when to stop killing. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just the micro fungi and the rootstocks and the everything else. It's all the rest of everything that goes on up from there. If you've got ants in your orchards, are the bees eating them? Are the worm birds eating the bees? You know, whatever. I mean, the whole chain all the way up. You've got to start somewhere. So why not start in the soil where it's the most important?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the only thing more important is the ocean, and that's another story, so we won't go there. But, you know, here we are. Here we are sitting here with this amazing resource right here.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's awesome. Really cool. Really good.
Yeah, and also, Frank, can we talk about the once-a-week luncheons or brown bag lunches that you have going on up there at the Research Center on Rogers Mesa?
So years ago, when I was visiting from the Front Range, I dropped in a couple times on the brown bag sessions at Rogers Mesa. And it was such a hoot because there were all these farmers sitting around having lunch, arguing with each other and complimenting one another and comparing ideas. And so that was one of the first things I wanted to reestablish there. And that was this discussion, open discussion quite often. Sometimes it's formal, but oftentimes it's just people talking shop and, exploring their experiences with one another. Last week we had Karen Rosen and Sonia Daly from the Insectary in Palisade.
Interesting.
That's so fun.
It was great. They came up and talked to us about biocontrol of Canada thistle and of knapweed.
Wow.
And they brought
Perfect.
Some parasitic wasps to release on our knapweed. And we found this parasitic fungi on our Canada thistle, which is knocking it out. And, it's fantastic.
Wow.
So hopefully we'll have a lot more people like that dropping in.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
I thought the most fun thing in the world would be to raise dragonflies.
Ooh. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not, right? And then you'd have all these dragons.
You could choreograph them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Could have all those
the flight of the dragonflies.
They're so cool. They're the coolest ever.
They are the coolest ever.
Have you ever seen a migration of those?
No. I would probably pass out.
I have to tell you this story. I'm sorry.
Please do.
It has nothing to do with gardening. We were in Belize and it was cold. They had one of those northern cold rainy spells and we were all kind of bummed. And then we started seeing these flights of dragonflies going north. And they went on and on and on. And there were just millions and millions of these big dragonflies just following the coast up for days.
Wow.
You could reach up and grab one at any moment. And it was just...
That's amazing.
Were they all the same kind or were there different colors? They were all the same kind.
That was scary, but it was...
They
were headed north.
Oh, my goodness. That's amazing.
Do you have to grow them in the southern... Do you have to grow them in Central America if you're going to grow them? I mean, they grow here, too, right?
Yeah. We have lots here.
Yeah.
I have no idea
where
they're headed.
I have seen at least 3 monarchs. I'm pretty excited about that.
I haven't, but I did see some... milkweed.
Nice. All right.
Yeah, what I've seen is a lot of painted lady butterflies.
Me too.
And this is about a month ago, I was talking to a friend in Southern California, San Clemente, where I'm from, and he's standing at his garage. He goes, "You can't believe this, Lance. About 200 butterflies fly by every minute, and they're all over the place. And it's
no
a painted
kidding.
Lady. And here we're having the same type of population. You know, it's a little early yet, but there they were. The other day when it was sunny, they were just all over the place.
Nice. Yeah.
And the painted lady has some relationship to some symbiotic thing that they do with the thistle. There's a weevil or something that gets in the thistle, and it has to do with the painted lady. it's a really cool story, but I forget the exact details. I'd have to look it up.
Yeah, the other thing I thought it was interesting about the Painted Lady butterfly is that it's worldwide.
No kidding.
Yeah, it's
every continent.
Worldwide habitat.
Wow.
And it was the first profession. Never mind.
The world's oldest profession.
Yeah. Yeah, but the bugs are great.
Yeah.
And got to appreciate that right now. I have seen a couple mosquitoes too. Hey, it is our friend Sue in Ridgeway on the line with a butterfly question. Good evening, Sue.
Hi. I was going to call anyway and ask about the butterfly. So the painted ladies look kind of like a monarch, but a little smaller. Is that right?
A little smaller and much more.
So Saturday and Sunday. They were a storm down here in Ridgeway.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
It was unreal. And I had to go to Montrose on Sunday and Saturday, and all the way up to Montrose were just butterflies.
Everywhere.
Butterflies. Yeah. That's so cool. It maybe because of the drought last year or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they had really good
survival. I was so excited. Yeah. I was like, but I knew I have seen a monarch migration before, and I knew these were smaller, right. But I did not know what they were. See, that's why I listen to you guys.
Sue always has good stuff to share with us, so we appreciate that.
Great. That's
that
awesome.
That was awesome. Thanks so much, you guys. Right.
Thanks, Sue. Good to hear. Yeah, I was in Ridgeway on Saturday, and they were just everywhere. It was crazy. Exciting stuff. I do remember a monarch migration when I was 12 years old.
Oh, wow. I've never seen one.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I saw crows one time, though.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I started counting them. And they were coming in pulses over the, when we lived in Carbondale. And they were just, I was watching them out the window, and I thought, oh, there goes some crows. And then, hey, there goes some more crows. And then by about the third batch, it got my attention, and I started going, you know, it was like, go, dog, go. Where are all those crows going? You know, they're going to the party in the crow tree or something.
They're going to the committee meeting.
And it was. And I counted and counted and counted. And there were 800 crows or something.
Whoa.
That flew over the house. Incredible. I mean, just random. You know, it was really cool.
Nice.
I get real excited about stuff like that.
I do too.
Go ahead. That was just another topic was that you're growing some cover crop seed trials?
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of seed, organic seed stuff.
My colleague down in Fruta, Reza, is an agronomist there, and he's doing these cover crop trials there, and he'd like to do them under organic systems. So we're looking at a whole bunch of different field peas and some fava beans and some garbanzos, and they're all planted. They're popping up now, and after this rain, they should really go.
Yeah.
They're really going to be happy when it gets warm.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be so
Will the garbanzos happy. Do okay coming up? Are they germinating now?
They are. They are germinating. Wow. And
usually that's such a hot season.
You know, I've had friends that seed them in February and are convinced that it's a really early spring legume. So I've not grown them myself, but we'll find out this year. And hopefully we'll have some chickpeas to make soup with or something if we don't turn them all in the ground.
Good deal. And tomorrow is another installment of the Seed to Seed program session, which starts up there at the research center. Is that correct,
yes.
Lance? So you guys involved directly. We have time for one more quick caller, Barry in Ouray with a crow story. Hi, Barry. We've got just a minute here.
Okay, hey, yeah, the crows. I mean, I was thinking about butterflies. I saw a western swallowtail about a month ago.
Wow.
You know, it's crazy. But the crows, I saw them flying from Sunny Ridgeway into the wind coming down out of the mountains, and there was a blizzard here. And they kept coming, like 800.
Yeah.
And they kept flying up into the wind, getting tossed. I'm like, where the hell are you all going? It's like a blizzard up there in Yankee Boy Basin. They just kept coming and coming out of Sunny Ridgeway.
Go, crow, go.
Go, crow, go.
What the heck? All right, guys. Thanks.
Good to know. It. Thank you, Barry.
Oh, man.
All right. Funny stuff. And thank you, Sue and Barry, for calling in tonight. And Thank you, Frank, for being here and letting us know what's going on. We feel so blessed to have that in our area and feel like hanging out at the Brown Bag Lunch on Thursdays at noon.
Please come. Yeah. Come along and bring your stories.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. And the Seed to Seed program that you guys are doing is in association with BOGA and the Learning Council. And I want to let you know about another thing that they are sponsoring, and it's Building Soil Fertility. And that's with Scott Horner from Small Potatoes Farm and Lloyd Nelson, who's great biodynamic resource. That is happening up at Small Potatoes Farm here in Paonia on Saturday, May 11th from 1 to 3. Should be really exciting. Learn how to build healthy soil with compost, cover crops, rotational planting, biodynamic preparations, annual manure, and soil amendments. You will be outside, so you can get more information at thelearningcouncil.org.
Nice.
Wow. A lot so of much stuff. Going on. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Thanks again, Frank, for being here. Lance and Lulu. See you next week. Okay. Hey,
good night,
it's,
everybody.
It's Amber coming up with One Woman's Perspective next. So thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns on KBNF.
Have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ta.
I got a gal that I love so. Low, little, low, and low.